Hello and welcome to another episode of the NBA Outlet presented by OTGBasketball.com. Make sure you follow OTG on Twitter at OTGBasketball. Also hit that subscribe button. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me as always, Corey Waldron and two guests today, Evan Dial, Jacob Hershon. What's up, fellas?
Hey, Nick, what's happening?
Hey, man, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
Let's rock and roll. I'm ready to get this show on the road.
Yeah.
We got a full house tonight, and first thing we're going to talk about, we're talking about the game last night. Knicks and Lakers, and it was a good one. KP went off. He was showing up for his IG shorty, dropping 37 points, 11 rebounds, 5 blocks, 5 threes. Big game. Lonzo Ball played pretty well as Kuzma hit a big shot late in the fourth. What were your thoughts on this game last night?
Well, first of all, Porzingis is incredible. The difficulty of shots he hit and his ability to bail the Knicks out of bad possessions were great, but Mick Bucket stood out to me. He was considered a throw-in with the trade with OKC, but I think he's been really good offensively for them. I know he still stinks on the other end, but, I mean, he cut backdoor on Ball several times. All their best offensive lineups include him. And then their young point guard, Frank Nicotina, had a couple huge jumpers in overtime, and he seems just to get better every game. And then for the Lakers, I really like the way Ball played. He had a couple shots, made great passes. Same with Kuzma. And the surprise for them this year, I believe they're eighth in total defense. And even though they lost, they played some pretty good defense for most of the game until the end. And the Knicks on that end are also better than I thought. So those are median thoughts, but definitely a very fun, entertaining game.
I unfortunately wasn't able to watch the game, and I haven't seen any highlights. So this is on you, Jake.
Well, I really enjoyed the game also. I love these games at MSG just because, like, the crowd's so hype, but also, like, in this game in particular, you got, like, Magic Johnson and Spike Lee and LeVar Ball on the sidelines, like, going nuts. So that just adds, like, a super fun dynamic to the game. The Lakers... I don't understand how they stay in these games. I just don't really think they have that much talent, but just, like, somehow they, like, stay pretty good in almost every game. This game was sort of the same way. Lonzo was actually very good, which surprised me a little bit. But, yeah, he had a good all-around game. Actually had, like, a pretty good shooting night and put up, I think, 8 rebounds, 6 assists. But, yeah, I mean, obviously the takeaway of the game is always going to be Kristaps. Like, he's just, like, so clearly on another level than the rest of these guys. So that was super fun to watch whenever he puts it all together for, like, a real.
Yeah, but like you said, though, Lonzo definitely had an impressive game. I think that was a game where you could kind of see the hype of why people would be excited about what he can do. His feel for the game was definitely on display. But back to Porzingis, you know, we've mentioned it, you know, he's taken another level this year. How close is Porzingis, you know, to approaching superstardom? Is that going to be something that happens in a year, 2 years, or is it ever going to happen for him? Or what do you think about Porzingis becoming a superstar?
I think he's been an all-star this year. I think he's a superstar franchise player. I mean, he's averaging close to 30 points a game, so that's for a superstar. You know, the next part for him is just rounding out his game. Passing, he could still use a little work. Same with defense. Maybe still wants to get a little stronger, but his three is much improved this year. He's a lot stronger. He gets the line all the time now. I think he's very close, and he'll be a superstar sooner rather than later.
Yeah, at least this I can comment on. Porzingis has clearly taken his game to another level this year. With Melo gone and Melo having his own struggles, you can clearly see that Melo might have kind of affected Porzingis' growth last season. But Porzingis looks like a stud. It's kind of hard to imagine any player at the power forward position in probably 5 years' time that could be as good as Porzingis, if Porzingis especially puts on any more size. He shoots the three at ease. He blocks almost anybody who wants to go into the paint. He's really dynamic, and he's a lot of fun to watch. His stat line last night, that's the only thing I saw from last night was the stat line. And, you know, 37 points, 5 threes made. The guy is balling out.
Kristaps already has the superstar ability. I think he's sort of got the superstar game already. Like, he's very well-rounded, like, very complete offensive game. His playmaking definitely has a bit of growing to do, but there are plenty of superstar-level players that don't really bring much in that category. His defense has been pretty impressive, too. Like, it's not just the highlight blocks. Like, I think he is a legitimately impactful defensive player at this point in his career. The thing with him isn't really the ability. It's going to be the conditioning. I think the only thing keeping him from being a superstar this year is just not being ready to carry this big of a load every night for 82 games. And hopefully he'll have that by next season. So I could definitely see him being top three, top five in MVP voting as soon as next year.
Yeah, he definitely is dominating. And like you guys mentioned, the passing, I think, was something that'll come because he's starting to see a lot more double teams like last night in the Laker game. Also, defensively, I think he's very impressive. If you think about it this way, Kristaps is the main reason they're able to play Kanter on the floor so much defensively because he can make up so much with his weak side blocking. So I think that's something big about Porzingis with his impact on both ends of the floor. All right, but I got a tough one for you guys. So obviously last night's game, Lakers-Knicks, they had a lot of good young players. I want you to rank the top five young players under 24 in that game.
Whoa. Okay, well, Porzingis is one for sure. Okay, so who's all under? This is Ingram, Ball.
Yep, yes. Frank Ntilikina.
Okay, I'll take Ball two, even though he's struggling now. I like his future a lot. Three, Ingram, four, Ntilikina, and five, who's left?
Kuzma.
Oh my God, I forgot about Kuzma.
Also, let's see, who else do we got here? Willie Hermann Gomez is another young guy, but I don't know if you throw him in there.
I'll put Kuzma at
Julius Randle, probably.
Is he under 24?
I guess. Yeah, I'm pretty sure he is.
23,
yeah.
Okay, well, that changes everything. Porzingis, one. That's a Ball, two. Kuzma, three. Randle, four. Ingram, five. That's not necessarily now, but in the future, if I was drafting them, and I guess Frank Ntilikina will just be a just miss.
What do you got, Corey?
Okay. I think Porzingis is clearly number one at this point. Two, I would go with Brandon Ingram at two. How old Jordan Clarkson? Isn't he 20? What is he, 20? Is he 26 now or 25? Is he a little bit older?
He might be right on the cusp. I'll find out. Give me one sec.
25. Yeah.
25, yep.
So what was, is that the age cutoff or is it 24?
No, 24. 24 age cutoff.
Well, damn. Notable mention. So, Brandon Ingram, two. Three, I'm going to go with Julius Randle. I still think Randle has a lot of potential. Four, I'll go with Lonzo. And then five, I'll go with Frank. I really like Frank's defensive presence, and I actually think he's going to be a nice piece once he develops next year.
All right, Jacob, what do you got for us?
All right, so Kristaps definitely clear number one. I'll take Brandon Ingram in number two. He was awful in his rookie season, but I think he's been really, really good this year and is clearly going to be like the go-to scorer on this team, however long they stay together. At number three, I'm going to go with Julius Randle. I love Julius Randle's game and, like, think he is sort of developing some, like, poor man's Draymond Green potential on defense. He's been really interesting to watch this year. Then I'll go with Kuzma at number four and Ball at number five. I like Lonzo's game, but I worry about the shooting. I worry if it's ever going to come around.
Talking about Lonzo, I agree with you guys. I think I would go with Porzingis number one. Obviously, I think he's clear cut. Number two, I like Ingram because I think, like you guys mentioned, I like what he's done as a scorer this year, and he's done that pretty much without a solid jump shot. So at some point where he adds that three-point shot, I think that's really going to make a difference. The rest, though, is probably close to a toss-up. Obviously, Lonzo, I think, is a guy that's really hard to gauge because, like you said, Jacob, we don't know if he's going to add that jump shot, and I think if he doesn't add that, that's going to be a whole different career path. If he has a jump shot, it's going to be a whole different career for him than if he doesn't because it's just such a big impact in today's NBA. And if he's able to have that three, he's going to be able to have such a bigger impact on the floor because people will actually have to respect his three. So I think that's important. Kuzma is definitely still a tough one too because he just kind of came out of nowhere. And obviously Julius Randle, it's weird. What do you guys think about Randle in terms of the Lakers, like what they should do with him? Obviously he's a free agent at the end of the season. There's been a lot of talk that the Lakers don't really plan on, you know, re-signing him. And even sometimes this year, he hasn't seen as many minutes as probably he's deserved because he's played well. So what do you think is going to happen with Randle? Is he going to be traded? Lakers going to just finish out the year with him? He'll sign elsewhere. Where do you see his career taking him in terms of, like, you know, best possible scenario?
Well, I like the other guys. I love Julius Randle. I think he's great. And I actually want my Charlotte Hornets to trade for him in a dream scenario. But, yeah, as you said, doesn't sound like the Lakers plan on re-signing him because they want to go big game hunting this summer, and doesn't seem he's part of their future plans. Wherever he ends up, as he's still under 24, they're getting a steal. I think he's really good. Defensively, he's been great, and one of the reasons why they're ranked so high. They play their best basketball when he's on the court. I also like his passing a lot. I think he's a guy who is capable of one day, you know, making one or two all-star games and, you know, averaging around 18-8, couple assists. I think he's great. But if I had to guess, I think the Lakers are going to trade him because I just don't think they have him in their long-term plans.
Yeah, I agree a lot with what you just said, Evan, about Julius Randle. I've been high on him since he came out of college. I think I always compare him to kind of like a great value Draymond Green at a young age. Because I think he can do everything similar to what Draymond does for the Warriors. Maybe not to that degree defensively. But, you know, he passes, he scores, he rebounds, he plays some defense. And, I mean, his ball handling for a power forward is also extremely well. I mean, he can run the floor. He can bring the ball up himself, which is kind of Draymond-like. I do think he's the odd man out, only because they have all three of these power forwards, and Larry Nance Jr., Kyle Kuzma, and Randle. So obviously somebody's got to go. If I was the Lakers personally, I think I would get rid of Larry Nance Jr., because I think Julius Randle and Kyle Kuzma are more dynamic. Larry Nance to me is more of just like a dunker and a rebounder. But it looks like Randle, because he's going to be a free agent, will be the guy they're going to get rid of.
Yeah, pretty much agree with everything you guys had to say about Randle. I mean, it really, really frustrates me the way that they've handled his entire career up to this point. It's frustrating for me to see when you draft a really good guy at seven like this, you know, like you get these really important draft picks and you actually hit on them, and now they're just sort of like letting this guy walk out of the door when, you know, teams like the Orlando Magic, who have been like stuck in this rebuild, just like desperately trying to turn these good draft picks into good players, would kill for a player like Randle, or kill for a player like D'Angelo Russell, you know, who they also gave away for basically nothing. So, yeah, I don't think Randle finishes the season with the team just because if they let him go into free agency this summer, they won't be able to trade him for anything. I think they're probably just going to try and deal him at the deadline and just get a little bit of return. But I think it's going to be a serious waste.
Where do you guys think Randle could end up going? You know, Evan, you mentioned maybe to Charlotte, you know, your squad. If you had to come up with a trade package, obviously the Lakers can't really ask for a ton because people kind of know that they're not expected to re-sign him. So what do you think gets you Randle, and who do you think makes the move for him? Maybe you had to throw out a couple teams.
Well, I was playing on the train machine a little bit earlier this week.
The best tool ever.
it gets addicting. And Miami jumps out as a team that I would be interested if they get in the Randle sweepstakes. They could offer something like Winslow and maybe a future pick, get the Lakers still a young wing that could defend. And Miami, they're struggling this year in terms of young talent. They don't have a ton. I wouldn't even be shocked if they looked at some Whiteside deals with his injuries. But they're just one team I would keep an eye on, especially at the Randle sweepstakes.
This is a tough one. If I had to put out, I mean, Miami's interesting because Miami, they're in that weird spot where they're kind of looking for young players. If I had to pick three teams, these are random. I'm picking these off the top of my head. San Antonio.
That'd be interesting.
Ooh.
Yeah, San Antonio and Brooklyn. If Brooklyn wanted to get some more youth, and they have kind of an issue with the rebounding and everything else over there. I know they just got Okafor. Who knows what he's going to become. And then Portland. I know if the trade market's not huge, Portland could use a power forward like Randle.
I like Portland. I like Portland. I think he could definitely add some value to that team. I think the Nets probably would have made a move for Randle if they didn't pick up Okafor. Jacob, what about you? Where do you think Randle could end up?
Funny enough, I actually really like the idea of him on the Knicks.
Yeah.
I don't know if they have anything to give in return for him. I think like if they're going to trade for this guy with the plan of re-signing him, the Lakers would probably have to take on one of their like awful contracts that they have on the book. The Lakers are going to be looking to do that. So realistically, the trade doesn't work, but I think Randle's the exact type of big that Kristaps needs next to him. Just like a guy who isn't going to need the ball in his hands a ton on offense. It's just going to, you know, set him and the rest of the offense up, make some little plays, and then really cover for Kristaps on defense when he's having to carry this huge load offensively. Yeah. So I really like that idea. I also really like the idea of him on Portland.
Yeah, I think with the Knicks, he also had some great offensive rebounds. And, you know, obviously Porzingis is going to get a ton of attention in terms of attacking the rim, you know, a lot of attention. So Randle would be able to swoop in, grab some boards. And you definitely like all the small things he does. But talking about different teams in the league, what would you say is your guys' top five teams that you're watching right now?
So this is just like on entertainment value?
Yeah. Like teams that even if it's from like, you know, they're terrible and you watch, like sometimes I catch myself watching a bad team. I don't know why, but I'll watch the Bulls like three nights in a row. I don't understand, but it happens.
I feel you on that. I watch the Bulls more than I should too. Okay. Number one is the Sixers, cause they're just fascinating when Embiid plays with Simmons. It's such a different style of basketball than anyone else plays in the league. And so I don't want to miss a minute of that. They're one, Houston with Paul and Harden and Capella. They're just amazing to watch. I really enjoy watching them. Obviously, they're very good. Let's see. Who else? Milwaukee, just because of Giannis. And then I like the Knicks a lot, too, in terms of entertainment. Porzingis, McBuckets is fun. Hardaway, before he got injured, was getting it going. I'll go them and entertaining. And five, let's see. San Antonio now that Kawhi's back, because love me some Kawhi.
Solid picks there. I mean, I definitely would agree with a lot of those. What about you, Corey? Who you got?
All right, so I'm going to start backwards. I'm going to work my way up. So at five, my fifth favorite team to watch this year so far has actually been the Lakers. I enjoy the fast tempo, and their second unit to me is actually more fun to watch than their starting unit. Four, I think is Portland. They've been a pleasant surprise for me. And even on the games they've lost, like Houston and the Warriors, they put up very good efforts in both those games, and they played very well. And Lillard has been on another level so far this year. Three, I have to roll with the Sixers. Embiid and Ben Simmons have been incredible to watch. And if Embiid stays healthy, I mean, that is arguably the best center in the league already. He's probably top three. I don't know if he's better than Cousins. But he's up there. And then for me, second would be LeBron and the Cavs. I can't get enough of LeBron James. And the fact that his career, you know, he only has, you know, what, 5 years tops, 4 years tops. I'm enjoying every moment of LeBron still tearing up the league. And then for me, first is the Pacers.
What a surprise!
That's a good one.
All right, come on. Though they've been good this year. They've been pleasantly surprising. So, Victor Oladipo is just incredible to watch so far.
Cool. So, my number five is actually a team I'm surprised to hear a couple of you guys mention. I thought this was going to be a pretty controversial choice. It's actually the Chicago Bulls. I really like watching them because. It's like a social experiment. It's sort of like it reminds me of like a sports movie, sort of like Major League, if you guys have ever seen that. It's like they decided to field this NBA team without putting any NBA players on it. So that's really fun to watch for me. Number four is actually Corey's Pacers. I love their whole vibe. Like, they just play so well together as a team, and I love their entire like youth vibe of like every time they win, it's like, we can't believe this is happening. Like, this is so cool that we're playing well, you know? So that always makes me happy. And number three for me is the Sixers. I think they've been on all of our lists. If you listen to any other podcast where they do these lists, the Sixers end up on everyone also. Like, they obviously have the great talent in Embiid and Simmons, but what I love is the way that they play together. Like, Brett Brown, after so many years of having just no talent to coach at all, he's just got this really good team just playing awesome basketball together. They move the ball so well, and they just play so smart on both ends. So I really appreciate that. Number two is the Houston Rockets. They've just been a juggernaut. Like, they've just been incredible to watch. James Harden's so good. The Rockets remind me, I don't know if any of you guys on here are Kanye West fans, but watching the Houston Rockets reminds me of listening to like peak Kanye for like the first time and just like being overwhelmed by the like perfection of like the craft and just like the pure bombast of it all, you know. So that I'm a huge Kanye guy, so that's about the highest compliment I can give to a team. But my number one is the New Orleans Pelicans.
It's good, kind of funny.
Yeah. I'm a Warriors fan, but you know, you guys follow me on Twitter. If you just looked at my Twitter, you would probably think I'm a Pelicans fan. I tweet about them all the time because the Warriors are just sort of, you know, kicking it and just sort of getting through the regular season. But I'm super, super invested in the Pelicans' success. I'm a huge DeMarcus Cousins fan. He's my favorite player in the league. So
before I
love
you
watching
tough.
Them.
I give my top five, would you say DeMarcus Cousins is playing better than Anthony Davis this season?
I would not. No. I think if you really watch the Pelicans on like a night in, night out basis, and really like live or die by their success, I would say they like DeMarcus' stats are definitely better, but like they need Anthony Davis to like really be a winning basketball team. Like, is it like they need both of those guys? But I mean, I still think that AD is better.
Gotcha. All right, for my top five, obviously I watch the Nets. I'm not going to throw them on my list. I watch every game, but I think obviously Houston. That for me, Houston's been the most fun to watch. Watching James Harden is like an instant highlight all the time, and you know that he's always going to have the ball, so it's not like you have to worry about other guys really making plays. Cleveland, like Corey said, LeBron has just been a monster. Sixers, obviously. Actually, I'm going to throw Corey's Pacers in there too. Like you mentioned, Jacob, they play with a lot of energy. Like they're always into the game. So I think that's always something you can enjoy. Fifth, I'll probably have to go. I guess I'll go with the Knicks. And I watch them not because I like love them. I live in New York and I'm not a Knicks fan. So I kind of hate them. So pretty much I'm rooting for them to lose. But I like Porzingis.
I'm surprised to hear you say Knicks on that top five over the Nets.
I said in the beginning that the Nets are – I watch every game, so I'm just going to exclude them.
Yeah, but the Nets are still enjoyable. Like,
yeah, I mean,
the Nets, they are.
They score enough, and their tempo is, like, just so fun in this type of NBA system.
Yeah, I mean, in my true number one belief, obviously, I'm watching the Nets over every team in the league all the time. But from the outside view, I'm sure not – I mean, like you said, though, the Nets definitely are catching people's eye. Yeah, shout out to Kenny Atkinson, who's done a great job coaching the team that's probably missing two of their best players. But moving on from there, trades. So we kind of mentioned Julius Randle before. You know, December 15th is the time when they can start to trade players that they acquired in the offseason. Who do you think needs to be the first team to make a trade? What teams really need to make a splash to kind of make sure they have a successful season?
Well, a couple teams I'm looking at is Minnesota to see if they can get any shooting or depth. They're playing their starters just unreal minutes, and they're last in the league in three-pointers. They got no one who can shoot and just no depth. So I'm wondering to see if they make any moves. And then a team I'm keeping my eye on is Portland, because just how long do they want to be stuck in 45 win land? And I can see them going either way in terms of staying the course, going all in, because the West is weaker than we thought this year, or maybe even blowing it up. I know Nurkic has kind of been a disappointment. They still need help at the three and the four and shooting. So I just wonder if they do anything monstrous out of nowhere, if they're that team.
Oh, man. It's always tough because it's kind of early. I mean, I do think Minnesota needs to make a move. You can't have Jimmy Butler and Wiggins play, you know, 40-plus minutes every game. You know, we're a quarter way into the season. I've seen Jimmy Butler play, you know, 45-plus minutes already, like, four or five times. That's absurd. That guy's going to be exhausted if they make the playoffs. So definitely their bench needs to be addressed. I think they only played, like, seven guys last night. They had, like, a seven-man rotation last night in that game against the Sixers, which is absurd. Like, Shabazz Muhammad didn't play.
Crazier at the pace that the NBA is playing out now. Like, you know, you think, you know, a few years ago to Chicago, the pace was down a little bit, but now every team is playing at such a high pace. So playing 40 plus minutes is almost ridiculous, especially on a consistent basis.
Yeah. And it was an overtime game too. So they had to play an extra quarter where they didn't rest. So, And I think Cat last night, Karl-Anthony Towns, I think he played like 48 minutes and like 71, like 60 seconds or something. It was a pretty 49 minutes. So I think they need to make a move. If they could somehow get a guy like Lou Williams, you know, just some kind of offense. Because like you mentioned, Evan, they're last in the league or one of the last teams in three-point percentage. And they can get some guy who can just come off the bench and be instant buckets because Jamal Crawford's just a little bit older. He can't give you a ton. If they could get somebody like that, I think that would be good. I think the Pelicans, as Jacob kind of mentioned, they're fun to watch, but they need more shooters. They need another shooter on that team. They need someone else who can take the load off of their big three. So they need a guy off the bench. Those would probably be my top two teams that need to make a move.
Yeah, the Pelicans really need a small forward more than anything. Their shooting's actually pretty solid all around, but they just like they're playing a lot of Etuan Moore at the three, and he's more of a shooting guard. So that would be their move. They unfortunately don't have a lot of assets to work with. My number one team that needs to make a trade is the Charlotte Hornets. Love them. Yeah, Evan, I'm sure you agree. I really loved them coming into the year. I thought they were probably a borderline lock to make the playoffs in the East, and they've just been awful. I've been really, really disappointed. So I don't know if that's a trade that they would be making to sort of blow it up and move into the next era of the team or try and move someone to tinker with this team a little bit and get them back on track. I know that Cody Zeller just got a long-term injury, so that takes one of their trade chips off the table for a little while. But, they've been a major disappointment, and I think they need to make a move there. I think it would be tough to unload the Nick Batum contract, unfortunately, as much as I love him. He's always been one of my favorite players. But, the other team that I think really needs to make a move – I apologize. My mind just went totally blank. Oh, no, there we go. another team that really needs to make a move is the Washington Wizards. I think the Wizards have, like, a legitimate chance to go to the finals this year if they can get everything together. And they neither need to get DeAndre Jordan or get a backup point guard. They finally need to give John Wall a legit backup point guard so when he comes back, he can play a reasonable amount of minutes. I'm not sure how they're going to get a backup point guard, but there's definitely a clear package for DeAndre out there for me.
Yeah, honestly, a lot of great teams. It's like a lot of these teams that are kind of on the cusp of being really good but not quite there yet that need to make a move. So I'm surprised nobody said OKC is a team that they think might make a trade.
Ain't got nobody.
True. They will.
What do we think about a team like Denver? Do we think they make a splash trade or no? They've been involved in a lot of rumors all year about maybe trying to upgrade that point guard position or just, you know, they're always in talks of trying to acquire a star type player.
They're interesting. They had a nice win last night. I know they probably want to try to unload for Reed or one of their like 1,000 backup power forwards to give some more time to Trey Lyles, who's been killing it. But I'm not sure. They kind of have limited things to work with unless they try to do something really massive and maybe go after like Mike Conley in Memphis. And that would take a first and for Reed and Chandler. But if I had to guess, I would stay pat unless we talked about OKC, Washington, Denver can be included in this. I think a lot of people are going to be chasing J.J. Barea of Dallas.
Yeah, he's having a great year.
I think he could help a lot of contenders. So I could see one of those three teams. I would love him in Washington, preferably. I think he would be great there.
It's funny because Washington seems to be like a place who just like runs through backup point guards. It's like every time they get one, we think they're going to be a solid addition. And they kind of just fall apart in Washington for whatever reason.
Very true.
I do think the Nuggets, at least Kenneth Faried can definitely be moved. Emmanuel Mudiay is definitely a guy who they've been trying to move just to get Jamal Murray some more playing time. Jamal Murray seems to either drop 30 plus or under 10. The ultimate boomer.
Yeah. And then, definitely FanDuel wise.
Yeah. I picked him last night, so it was good. Wilson Chandler. He was bad to start the year. Then he got hurt, and since he's come back, he's found his touch from deep at least. That's another guy who they could probably move because he's getting some more value back. Can maybe package him and Faried, and maybe Mudiay to maybe get a pick to get like a guy like Conley perhaps. They make a move because they need another star when Georgia gets back.
I think they probably stay off the trade market this year just because it's kind of a lost season. Like they made this big splash move getting Paul Millsap. It was probably the biggest free agent signing in like the history of their franchise. They've never been much of like a free agent team. And then he's pretty much out for the season. He got hurt almost right away, not supposed to come back for up to 3 months. And now Jokic just got this long-term injury too. So I think they just focus on developing the young guys unless they can maybe trade Wilson Chandler, who I believe is a free agent at the end of the year, or Kenneth Faried, whose money is sort of plugging up the books for some youth. I think they probably just keep it together and run it back for another year.
Shout out to Jokic. He might return tonight against Boston.
Okay.
Yeah. But what about let's talk a little bit of East. What about Cleveland and Toronto? Does Toronto try to make another splash move like Ibaka last year? And does Cleveland try to add, you know, another bench piece, or are they both sitting still?
Well, the problem with Toronto is they want to unload Valanciunas, and that's
no one wants him.
No one wants him. And they also don't have a first round pick, I believe, due to the Brooklyn salary dump with Damari Carroll. So they
trade looks real good right now.
Exactly. So they can't attach that to something friendly. So I think Toronto may stay pat because they're just super deep anyway. Cleveland, you know, it's up to them if they want to go all in. Do they look at Gasol with their own pick and the Tristan Thompson Shumpert package? And I don't know if they do it, but if I was them, I would at least look at it. I think he would be killer there.
I broke up, so I didn't hear the name. I missed something.
Cleveland or Toronto?
For what?
Make a trade.
Oh, sorry, my connection all I heard was like you guys were robots for about 2 minutes, so that was funny. So in like La La Land, Takeover, Terminator. So let's see. I think Toronto is more likely to make a move than Cleveland, because I feel like if Cleveland makes a move, it's going to be either for DeAndre or a guy like DeMarcus Cousins, and I'm not sold that either team are set on moving either one of those players to this point. And Toronto, they're in a weird place. You know, DeRozan and Lowry are playing extremely well. I mean, the team in general is playing well above what I thought they were going to be this year. Even with their issues between Serge Ibaka and Valanciunas, who both have been kind of hit or miss this year, they're not playing extremely well, but they've had some decent moments. If they could get a guy like Kenneth Free, they just need some help at the power forward position, I think, just to take some weight off Ibaka. And Valanciunas defensively in the playoffs is kind of, yeah, he's not who you want. So if they could get a center in there, that would be a big move for him too.
I have a bit of a controversial Toronto trade take that I like to share with as many people as I can.
I want to hear it.
I believe that the Raptors' one only move is to trade DeMar DeRozan. I like DeMar's game. Well, I don't like DeMar's game. I recognize that DeMar is a very talented player. I think his whole like 1997, like take 16 mid-range jumpers a game thing just like really puts a distinct ceiling on their playoff chances. And they have now transitioned to this totally new style. They're finally like playing with a little more pace and taking a lot more threes, and it's been really successful. Like they've had some really great stretches where those threes start to go in, but you see at the end of the games it just sort of goes back to the DeMar show. And I think it's going to be a real problem in the playoffs. I don't really know who wants DeMar DeRozan, and you can't just like trade him for pennies on the dollar. You know, like if there was like a situation where they could trade him for CJ McCollum of the Blazers, like that would be incredible. I think the Raptors would be like a real potential like finals team if they could pull something off like that. But that's obviously going to be tough. I don't really know if the Blazers want DeMar more than they would want CJ McCollum. So that would have to be like CJ demanding a trade probably. As far as Cleveland goes, I think that they end up trading the Brooklyn pick for something. I'm not totally sure what it's going to be yet. I think Marcus Gasol's maybe going to force his way out of Memphis, which is a big disappointment for me because I love those Grizzlies teams, but if Cleveland wanted him, maybe they could make a run with the Brooklyn pick.
Currently 11th if the draft was today. Obviously, lottery simulator doesn't count. But DeMar DeRozan, I think that's an interesting thing. You know, DeRozan gets traded, you heard it here first by Jacob. But I think I definitely do like CJ's fit in Toronto. I just don't – it's so hard to trade a star player like that unless they're forcing out the move. But I guess that would be the best time is when no one talks about it, because then you actually can get proper value.
Exactly.
because soon as it's brought up one time, it's like, oh, you know, everybody knows you're trying to trade him. But sometimes that works out. I know Corey can tell us about Victor Oladipo. So
that was finding a diamond in the rough.
Yeah, that definitely worked out. But that wraps it up for today. Jacob, Evan, Corey, thank you for hopping on. As always, thank everybody for listening. And you can listen to the NBA Outlet on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, and OTGBasketball.com.